Hey everybody, and welcome to the Hack My Homestead podcast. This is Sean Mills, and it's Christmas Eve, December 24th, 2023. I am joined today by my younger daughter, Amy Mills. Say hello, Amy.
Hello, Amy.
Amy is joining me today because we're going to get the thoughts on what it's like to live off-grid as a teenager. And so, give you a little history. We moved off-grid in 2012 when Amy was five, right before she started kindergarten. And then we moved from the off-grid property to, I guess you'd call it a partially off-grid property when we went to Indiana. So we had rainwater collection, wood-burning stove, and partially off-grid water heating when we were in Indiana. We also had some 12-volt DC lighting in the house that was powered by solar, but generally we were on-grid for power in Indiana. And then we moved back in 2016, and then we moved to East Tennessee, where we were all the way on-grid, with and then we put in a small grid-tied system. And then we moved to Alabama in 2020 during COVID, and we were fully on grid again. That was probably like our most non-homesteady property that we've ever had, was the one in Alabama, which we sold this year and moved back to the fully off-grid property. So she's had all the way on grid, all the way off grid, and partially off grid. You probably don't remember moving to Linden the first time.
Nope.
Very much, right? Before
no.
You were five?
I barely even remember Indiana, honestly.
Okay. And so, yeah, we'll just run through it. So, Amy, what's like the biggest thing that you have to deal with, like on a regular basis, that you wouldn't have to deal with if you were on grid?
Well, I mean, the water and power. Like, it's always a conscious thing that I think about, like, how much power am I using, how much water am I using, so, I mean, it's mostly just having to be conscious of that.
Yeah, since you don't pay the water bill or the power bill when we were on grid, you don't really think about your usage. Like, you could take a 45-minute long shower and...
And I did.
Yes, and no one...
I did definitely
no one,
bad enough.
No one even knows.
No one even knows.
Right. So actually being conscious of your consumption is the biggest difference on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And so with the way our water system is set up right now, like what's the biggest hassle?
The biggest hassle is like if you want to take a shower, you have to go outside and check the water. And if the water's low, you have to fill up the water and always kind of just trying to make sure that you have enough water. And also, you know, not understanding how any of it works.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you started trying to explain to me what happens whenever we get under like 20 gallons of water, and I didn't know what you were talking about. Honestly.
Okay. So how do you think the water works?
I think...
Like you have to have some sort of concept of how our water system works.
Well,
so what do you think? And then I'll just
based on what you
beat
told
you down
me,
and correct you.
Right. Based on what you told me, the you know, there's the main tank that we use, the little, 250-gallon
Right,
thing.
It's an IBC tote.
IBC tote. And there's, like, a little, what's it called? The float valve thingy.
Okay, so you think there's a float valve in there.
I've heard you talk about float valves, so I mean, okay. That's what I would assume. And once
so there's,
it gets,
there's a float valve in the IBC.
Yeah. And that whenever the water gets below a certain height, it'll start taking from the big tank.
Okay, the settling tank, which is a 1,550-gallon tank.
Right. And then whenever that gets too far down, then it starts, like, taking it turns on the, or it's at least it's supposed to turn on the... well pump and pull water from inside. So there's always like a backup plan for a backup plan, but we try not to use the backup plan.
So you think that the well pump comes on automatically when the settling tank gets too low?
I think it should.
But do you think it does?
But we don't let it.
Okay.
I think it does.
You think it does?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
But we don't let it.
So whenever we need to put power, we need to put water into the IBC tote from the deep well, what's that process? Right now, what's the process?
Right now, you turn on the generator, you plug in the little plug thingy that goes somewhere, and then it turns on the hose. Which, well, it turns on
the... The plug turns on the hose.
The plug turns on the well pump, and then the well pump brings water through the hose.
Okay.
Which we then put into the IBC tote.
Okay. So we don't have float valves anywhere in the system.
Right.
Let me explain to you what a float valve is. So a float valve is just basically like a light switch. Mm-hmm. But instead of a person flicking it, the water pushes the float up or it floats down. Mm-hmm. And that opens or closes the switch. Okay. So the way that our system works, and I think what you were thinking of when you were saying float valve was foot valve.
Sure.
Yeah. So there is a pipe that runs into the IBC that pumps water into the pressure tank in the house that's actually in the utility room. Mm-hmm. At the end of that pipe, there's what's called a foot valve. And so what that valve does, one, it helps filter any big stuff that might be in the IBC, which there shouldn't be. But if there was any, like a leaf or something in there, mm-hmm. it would filter that out. And it has a little stopper on the end of it that's spring-loaded. And so when the tank is pulling water, it opens that valve. And when the tank stops, or the pump stops actively pulling water, the spring pushes the valve closed. So that way the pressure that's built up on the other side of the system doesn't push all that water right back down.
Gotcha.
So when we lived in Indiana, we had a rainwater catchment system that went into an underground cistern.
I'm going to be so honest. I do not remember that we had a... I completely forgot that we had a rainwater catchment system in Indiana.
And at one point, our float valve actually went out. The spring broke. And so what would happen is we would pressurize the system with the well pump mm-hmm. in Indiana. And then as soon as the pressure pressure switch turned the tank off, rather the pump off, I don't know why I keep referring to the pump as a tank. When the pressure switch turned the pump off, the pressure in the system would just push all the water right back down into the cistern, mm-hmm. and then the pressure would drop, and the tank would come back on, or the pump would come back on, uh-huh. and it would pressurize it, and then it would turn off, and it would push all the water right back in. So it was pulling water from the tank and pushing it right back, and pulling and pushing. So that's what a float valve does, mm-hmm. okay? And that's important because it allows the side of the system that you're actually pressurizing to maintain pressure. So we have a pressure switch that the pump that's in the utility room is hooked to. Mm-hmm. When the pressure goes down to about 40 PSI, that turns on. And then when it goes up to about 60, it turns off. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, if we had a float valve, what we would have is a valve that as it goes down, it turns the pump on, and then when it floats back up because the water level has risen, it turns it off. And so what a lot of people will do in a system like ours is they'll actually put two float valves in. They'll put one down low and then one up high. And so when the low one opens up, it actually hits a relay that turns the whole system on. Mm-hmm. And then that allows the pump to rise all the way up until it hits the top, and then that hits the same relay and turns the system off.
Yeah.
So, what you were describing was that if the level of water in the IBC is below the float valve and the pump comes on, it'll just pull air. It won't be able to actually get any suction to pull water into the system.
Gotcha.
Because the float valve is about 4 inches tall and it sits about 2 inches above the bottom of the tank.
Oh.
So if the height of the water in the tank is below about 6 inches, mm-hmm. it won't be able to pull water. And 6 inches in that tank corresponds to about 50 gallons.
Gotcha.
And so since the most water-heavy thing that we do in the house would use about 20 gallons of water, or at least that's the number that we use, what we say generally is if there's less than 70 or 75 gallons of water in the tank, we actually need to add water to the tank before we start doing that thing, whether it's taking a shower, washing dishes, washing clothes. Actually, washing clothes was the thing that we were talking about.
Yeah.
So, So that's the biggest like hassle is you have to go check the water level before you do anything that uses water. Okay. And that's something that you don't have to worry about when you're on grid. Now, I will say that as I redo some of these systems, some of that goes away because we will have a tank monitor, tank level monitor in the house next to where the hot water heater is, where you can literally just look at it and see that there's water in the
Yeah,
tank.
that's nice.
So what else is different from being off grid versus being on grid?
Well, a lot of what's the word? Like things that make things easy. What is it?
Conveniences?
Conveniences. A lot of conveniences
Like
aren't there.
vocabulary?
Yes.
Okay.
A lot of conveniences aren't there, but I mean, it's not like it's hard. I mean,
It's just
obviously
different.
there's more work that you have to put in every once in a
Like
while
what?
if you want help from me, like you know, if you need help setting up solar panels, or if you need help or if you ask me to do you a favor and fill up the water tank or something like that. Like, it's just random work here and there, but it's not like I do work every single day because, you know, I'm forced to.
Right, it's work that you wouldn't have to do if you just, you know, if the water, if the city just sent water to your house.
Yeah.
But it's not hard work and it's
It's
not
not,
all the time work.
yeah.
What about heating and cooling?
Oh, heating, honestly, even if I did live on grid, I probably would use blankets more than I would use like central heating. But I mean, that might have something to do with the fact that I've lived off grid a
Right.
good amount of my life. But I mean, if you're
We yeah,
talking about the differences
we have
between.
primarily heated with wood since you were five.
Yeah.
Even when we lived on grid, our thermostat was set much lower to other than other houses,
Yeah.
and we would primarily heat with well, we would primarily heat with body heat, and then we just add layers to keep our
Yeah.
body heat because our body just constantly creates heat. And then, if we wanted to get it above what the thermostat was set at, we would use wood, even when we were in Clinton.
But with cooling was always much more of an annoyance with me, 'cause I'm not so bad. Like, if I have moving air, I'll probably be okay even if it's really hot outside. But I mean, obviously, if you're doing work or if you're moving around a lot, you can't have moving air on you all the time. And the fact that we don't usually use energy to, like, I mean, unless it's really hot, we don't usually use energy to cool the house because we're always pretty okay. But that's why I don't really like the warmer months. I like the cooler months more than I like the warmer months, because it's so much easier to warm up with blankets and stuff than it is to cool down.
Right.
Because
You
you almost
can't.
always have to use
There's.
energy to cool down,
Right.
rather than with warming up, you just use blankets,
Yeah, there's
in
no
my
like
opinion.
equivalent easy button
Yeah.
for cooling like
Yeah.
there is with heating.
Other than water, but I mean, you don't always get that. You need energy to get water most of the
Well,
time.
not necessarily. I mean, we could just go down the hill and go to the
That's true.
creek.
But that's walking.
Yeah. Then you get hot from walking.
Exactly.
Ugh. So, yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what our experience is this coming summer now
Yeah.
that we have all the solar arrays up and we have both a solar powered AC and two inverter based air conditioners
Yeah.
that can run off of the system and don't create a significant amount of energy load for the system.
Yeah.
So this will be the first summer where we, so last summer we had air conditioning, but not a ton of solar generation. So we had to be careful about how much we used it. This coming summer, we will have
A lot.
four times the solar production that we've had any other summer, and a significant amount of battery storage that we have not previously had. So that should be a bit of a game changer,
Yeah.
which will be nice.
What about like next year? Or what kind of animals are we gonna get? I'm excited about getting animals because it's been a while since we've had farm animals.
Yeah, so that's the big thing you're looking forward to this year
Yeah.
is animals.
Because every other time that we've had, like, farm animals and, like, producing, like, chickens and stuff like that, I've always been really young and afraid of the roosters, so I didn't really want to take care of them. But now I'm a lot more ready for being responsible over some animals. But I'm.
You're taller and heavier now, so you can
Yeah.
drop kick
Oh, yeah.
those roosters. Yeah, so next year, chickens for sure. Most likely quail as well. Most likely rabbits as well.
Really?
Maybe ducks. Maybe turkeys later in the year, a meat run of turkeys. And we'll see about anything larger than that. You know, I think next year that'll be plenty of work for us to get all the systems in place. But yeah, chickens, quail, rabbits. Those are the things that I'm really thinking are the most likely things that we'll do next year.
I'll pull up.
We'll probably buy some goats from Steve next door.
Really? I thought you said you didn't want to do that.
I'm not talking about raising goats. I'm talking about buying goats for eating.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. We just bought a half cow, so we'll see how long that lasts. You know, we got about a little over 300 pounds of beef, and to go along with all the other beef that we have, and we've got salmon that we get pretty regularly, and chicken, and so the meat for eating is you know, we're primarily bringing that in from off the property. So this year we'll really look to supplement that. And I'd like to find a place where we can get local dairy. Because when we go to the store, the main thing that we buy that we bring in from outside from the store
Dairy.
are dairy products.
Well, I know there's a place near us that has like unwashed eggs. I don't know where, and I
Yeah,
don't
but.
know what else they have.
Yeah, but yeah, they may be a supply. They may either be a source or be able to help us find a source.
Yeah.
There's a lot more local agriculture that you can actually buy directly from in Perry and surrounding counties now than there was when we lived here before. So that's kind of nice. What else is different from living off grid?
Well, I mean, I don't really know, 'cause like most of the time whenever 'cause since it I was so young when we first lived off grid, I'm so used to the lifestyle of living off grid that whenever we do live on grid, there's not much changes. Like there's more conveniences, like when we lived in Alabama, we had a microwave and you know, technically unlimited power and water, technically, like definitely not actually, but you know, never had to worry about it. But
It wasn't a thought part of the thought
right.
process.
But I didn't really do much of the things that I wouldn't have been able to do off grid when we were on grid. Like, I mean, I used the microwave a lot, but that was pretty much it.
Well, and for most of the things that you would use the microwave for in Alabama, we do have an air fryer.
Right. Didn't have that
Like, there's just a few
resource.
things that you would need a microwave for that now you need, or that you can't use an air fryer for. So,
Right.
like, hot pockets.
Yeah.
You wouldn't make a hot, I don't know, maybe you can.
You probably can. I've made what are those, the Tostitos pizza rolls in air fryer? Pretty good.
Yeah, but those are meant to be made in an oven, not a
Yeah.
microwave. There's other things out there that's like literally meant to be made in a microwave. So, but we don't
We don't need
deal with those
those.
things, right? Yeah. I mean, most of the time when you were using the microwave in the past, it was to heat up,
Yeah.
you know, burgers or steaks or hot dogs or something that we had already made on the
Yeah.
grill or on the stove. So, okay. Any things that you would like to see us add to the off-grid homestead this year to make your life easier? You seemed like you were pretty excited about that tank level monitor.
Yeah, I mean, the monitor would definitely make it easier because there's a lot of vines around. I mean, you can obviously get rid of the thorns and stuff, but I haven't yet, but there's a lot of vines behind the house, so I actually got cut the other day trying to go back there and fill up the water. I was like rushing to go turn off the generator because the water was about to overflow, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I like there was a thorn that went through my pants. That hurt.
Yeah, so the other thing that we'll do once we get our new backup inverter is we'll rewire the big deep well pump to run off of the main house system so that we take the generator out of the equation.
I was about to say, because I just punched the wall this week trying to start up the generator.
Right.
Didn't even do anything.
The current location of the generator is right by our utility room door, and so if you're not careful, you can... While pulling the string to start the generator, you can slam your arm slash hand on the wall.
Yeah.
I've done it. You've done it. I think Ashley's done it.
Probably. I think all of us have done it at one point or the other.
Probably right. Okay, Amy. Well, thank you for joining the podcast today and giving your assessment of the challenges of living off-grid.
You are so welcome.
As a teenager. What did you say? From the perspective of a child.
From this perspective of a child.
Right. Yep. Okay. All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining us. This might be the last one for the year. I might throw one out next week, week in between Christmas and New Year's. Haven't decided yet. Depends on whether, you know, it seems like there's interesting stuff to talk about. But as a reminder, if you buy from EMP Shield, you can use the coupon code HMHS for Hack My Homestead. Or if you buy from Signature Solar, you can use the code HackMyHomestead for $50 off. Outside of that, there are several places where I do have affiliate links. So if you go to HackMyHomestead.com and just see if there's an option there available for you, that would be great. It doesn't cost you anything extra, and it helps me out and helps pay for some of the costs related to producing and hosting the podcast. Well, that being said, I hope everyone has a happy holiday season, and we'll talk to you next time.